Okay, I also want to note that I want to dedicate tonight's chavurah to the memory of Rabbi Jerry Acker. Rabbi Acker was a wonderful person. We had an opportunity to know him. And Dina, his daughter, and his son-in-law Moshe, are such active parts of our regular weekly learning. So I just wanted to dedicate this evening Le'ili Nishmaso, and for Nechama for them, and for the whole greater family, such a lovely, sweet family. And they should just know no more tzar. So I'm going to deal with two questions tonight, if that's okay with the two of you. We'll see if we can get through both of them. I think we will, but we'll see. Question number one, we're getting to the other end of the COVID, right? I think, and I'm starting to see some light at the end of the tunnel. But then, with some light comes some questions, and that's always some good solid fodder for Torah. I think one of the small silver, maybe large silver linings that has happened over the course of the last 14, 15 months is that we have learned more interesting areas of Torah that we otherwise probably in our lifetimes never imagined would be relevant. And now all of a sudden we have working hands-on knowledge of these topics because we experienced them. So tonight I'm going to deal with two of them also. Question number one, which may make you both laugh because you're not sure who asked me the question. Could have been a patient, could have been somebody else. Help! I've been so careful with the COVID-19 hand washing that as a result, I suffer from extremely dry skin that cracks and really hurts. My doctor has prescribed a certain lotion that moisturizes my hands, and it seems to be working. The only thing is that when I wash Netilas Yadayim, whether in the morning or before I eat bread, I think that there's a film on my hands. What am I supposed to do? Question number one. And question number two. In the middle of all this COVID-19 chaos, I've become very conscious of the need to support our kosher restaurant industry. However, due to personal concerns or governmental regulations, I often can't find a spot to eat indoors at my favorite kosher eateries. My spouse would like to go out to eat, but it often means eating outside. Doesn't the Gemara say that there's a problem with that? What should I do? Eating outside or cream on the hands? Crème de la crème. So which one should we start with?
I like the eating outside. I've never heard of that one.
Okay. So then let's start over.
But it sounds like the two of them is good for business on Morris Avenue.
There we go. So in the middle of all this COVID-19 chaos, I've become very conscious of the need to support our kosher restaurant industry. However, due to personal concerns or governmental regulations, I often cannot find a spot to eat indoors at my favorite kosher eateries. So I secretly am not telling you if the person is in the States or maybe asking from Israel, where, depending on who you are, you may be able to eat outside, indoors, or you may need to eat on what they call the midrachov, or Doc, how would we translate midrachov? Either of you?
Promenade.
The promenade. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Right. So certainly anyone can eat at a promenade now in Israel. Whether or not you have what's called I checked with a local expert, my daughter Eliana. And she says to me, whether or not you have a Tav Yarok, which is the green card, but not the green card. It's the green card of Israel that lets you go ahead and enter places because it means you're vaccinated. Of course, you also have to be a citizen to have a Tav Yarok. So somebody like, say, my daughter has a letter that says, had she been a citizen, she would have a Tav Yarok. Right? So she went out to eat with my sister-in-law, her aunt, over Yantif. And she said that they had to eat in the midrachov because it was too difficult for the waitress to figure out whether they should eat inside, whether they could eat inside or not, because of the letter my daughter had. So they just, let's just eat outside. It was a nice day, and that's what they did. So my spouse would like to go out to eat, but often means eating outside. Doesn't the Gemara say that there's a problem with that? What should I do? So let's first of all realize what Gemara, where. Right, I have my Zichru expert. It certainly is not in Brachos or Shabbos or Erevin or Pesachim, or most of Shkolin, because by now Devorah you'd have. And the truth is, it's not. It's a Gemara in Kiddushin. It's on Daf Mem Amid Beis. I remember the first time I learned this Gemara in high school. I think we all went, "Whoa!" Right, because it meant all sorts of challenge. The Gemara notes that one who eats in the market is like a dog. This is the Gemara's language. In fact, some people say the eino yachol lahaid, that a person who eats this way is not allowed to testify, leading Rav Edi Bar Oven in the Gemara to note that this is not just a matter of derech eretz. It's not just the right way to proceed. It's actually straight halacha, because if somebody violates halacha, you know, that such a person is going to be a person who's not going to be allowed to be involved in testifying, right? A person doesn't keep Shabbos, for instance. Such a person is not going to be able to be an aide at a wedding, right? Or sign your prisbal, you know, come next year, which is, right, why we have to be done with COVID, so that, you know, the rabbis can all start talking about shmita topics. We have our new topic set up for next year, right? So it's straight halacha. And I should also just mention that this Gemara is actually mentioned by the Rambam. Where does he mention it? So ironically, it's in Hilchos Eidos. It's in the Halachos of Testimony in Perek Yud Aleph Halacha Hey. But the Rambam limits the halacha over there to people who are mehalchin bashuk. They walk around in the marketplace. Seemingly, it sounds like the Rambam is saying, where is a person considered like a dog? When the person is
walking and eating ice cream.
Yeah, walking around and eating, not when a person is sitting appropriately at a table, which would suggest that you could eat at the Midrachov, according to the Rambam, but you can't walk around in the Midrachov. So Rabbi Yaakov Emden, in his commentary on the Gemara, he says the same thing as the Rambam. But I have to stop and I have to look at this and say, wait a second. Why would sitting at a table make it any better? Right? After all, if you look at Rashi on the Gemara, Rashi says that the reason why the person who eats in the marketplace is considered like a dog is because he's not acting min hayishuv, which literally means he is not acting communally, with dignity, right? He doesn't have any awareness. So somebody who doesn't care and is not a part of community and he does his own thing, right? That's why he doesn't care who he's eating in front of, blah, blah, blah. That's a difficulty. That shouldn't make a difference whether you're doing it outdoors, you know, in public. Obviously, if you want to eat outdoors in your backyard, isn't hey, right? Rashi doesn't differentiate the way the Rambam does. It also led me to ask a question. So if there's a problem eating in public, standing up, there is another Jewish, but well-known Jewish practice made more popular by Senator John and former President John F. Kennedy, known as JFK, or just for Kiddush, right? What about Kiddushes? Now, thank God we're not so worried about that, because who goes to Kiddush anymore? But to be quite honest, isn't Kiddush a big violation? Does this mean now that if you have a Kiddush, you cannot now testify at a wedding? Let me ask you another question. You go to a wedding. What's the first thing that you do at the wedding?
The smorgasbord.
The smorg.
Wait a minute. And what do they do at a smorgasbord?
You walk around with the food.
You walk around standing up eating the food. In fact, there was
a whole big room.
I took a course in the Smicha program that was taught by the late, great Rabbi Dr. Israel Miller, who was the vice president of Rabbi Norman Lamb. And by the way, the man was a gem. He was a gem of a human being and a rabbi for, at that point in time, probably upwards of 40 or 50 years. So I remember he taught a course called Practical Rabbinics. The course was fascinating because we learned very important lessons in that class. Like, for instance, I don't know if you know, but you can't wear black shoes with a brown suit. You also can't wear brown shoes with a black suit. I would never have known those things, but Practical Rabbinics, this is part of the lesson. You may not have known this, but I remember one week Rabbi Miller walks into the room and he announces to the group of us, we're a small group, but we're a fun group, and he says, today we will discuss how the rabbi conducts a wedding. So we all laughed and we figured, okay, practical rabbinics, but we've done that before. So he stops and he says, what is the first thing a rabbi does when he gets to the wedding? Goes around the room and when he's done, he says, wrong, 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 wrong. And what was the first
thing? He eats in the smorgasbord. Because
you've heard that from me before.
Later on.
That, yeah, you've heard my story already, Doc. Well done. That's exactly what Rabbi Miller told us.
No, it's a known fact. It's a
right?
known
he says,
fact.
The rabbi goes to the smorg, because once he starts dealing with the wedding, that's exactly what Rabbi Miller told us. You're going to get stuck at the rabbi's table. And how are you going to be able to enjoy yourself eating there? You're going to all get stuck eating fish. It was great. It was great. So I remember it became a big joke around like the 8 or 10 of us in the room that from now on, when we go to weddings, we go, but how could a person be a Masada Kedushin or an aide at a wedding if you ate the smorgasbord or an outdoor engagement party or an outdoor wedding or a bar mitzvah? If you're eating and this is such a problem and you're not allowed to testify, what are we going to do? It's a real big problem. So Tosis in Kiddushin, in its commentary on Kiddushin, quotes Rabbeinu Chananel, who says that, what kind of eating do you think you're doing in the marketplace? Think of a marketplace that you know well. I'll give you one. Machane Yehuda, right? Machane Yehuda. What's Machane Yehuda? You've all been there before. So you walk through Machane Yehuda, and, you know, you can do a full Kiddush at Machane Yehuda. How? You walk to this guy, you taste the grape, you go to that guy, they got the, you know, when I was last in Israel, they got us very into the mixtures of the dry fruits that they make the tea out of, those little tiny pieces, right? It's delicious, that stuff. Oh, it's unbelievable, right? We bought tons of that stuff. But if I go to one guy, right, and I start eating his stuff, and then I realize the guy halfway down the way has a half price, right? So, and I'm eating over here. Rabbeinu Chananel says, I'm stealing from the people. Yes, I'm stealing less than a pruta, but I'm stealing. So he says, that's the example we're talking about. Then Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Eliyahu, who says, no, we're talking about the guy who's swiping samples with no, as if he's interested in buying them, but he's not. So there used to be a big, the biggest kiddush in the world used to be held in October, November time, in either the Meadowlands or the Javits Center. It was known as Kosher Fest. And what happened at this grand kiddush known as Kosher Fest?
Nosh.
Everyone and their brother would come around and they'd be noshing away. So really Kosher Fest is there for the storekeepers, for the purchasing buyers, not for, you know, every single Tom, Dick and Harry to walk out with such a person. According to Rabbeinu Eliyahu and Tosus, that's the person who's like Ochel Bashuk. He makes himself look like he's interested, but he has no busha, no embarrassment, and that's what he's talking about. Then Tosus quotes Rabbeinu Tam, who says, no. He says, he thinks that eating bread is even worse. If you eat bread in public, that's where the problem begins. So it sounds like he's talking about, like, I don't know, let's say you're in a big round sphere. I'm sorry, a big round dish that is open to the elements that has, I don't know, 55,000 seats in it, right? That has a diamond right in the middle of it. And you stuff a hot dog in your mouth in such a crowd. So, otherwise known as eating a hot dog in Yankee Stadium, maybe Rabbeinu Tam thinks that's a problem. It reminds me when the first time you could get a kosher hot dog at a stadium was the Baltimore Orioles, and the Starcade put their hechsher on it. So I remember, my friends in Baltimore said to me, you haven't had an experience at a baseball season at a stadium till you had a kosher hot dog like everybody else. Oh, that's Americana. So my friend, who is a descendant of the Chernobyl Rebbe, right, who is a successful attorney, Kainahara, and a former active rabbi, still a wonderful rabbi, says to me, he married a girl from Baltimore, he says to me, this is an experience you're chayav to have in life. A hot dog at the stadium. And I said to him, I wonder what Rabbeinu Tam would say. We had been learning Kedushin earlier that year. So he gave me a nasty face look. But, the truth is that, right, you know, all of these situations, if we, depending on how we interpret that Gemara and Kedushin, can range from something that's like really obvious, swiping, stealing less than a pruta from the storekeepers, to something a little bit less obvious, but, you know, a little bit more logical, swiping samples with no intention of buying, to something that's even more off the wall, which is the idea that, if you eat a hot dog or go to a smorgasbord or all these other things, that's also a major problem, or even sitting on the midrachov. So which way do we work it out, and how do we make sense out of it? So maybe we can argue that this may be built on what? Maybe our whole issue is built on Rashi's idea of Einom and HaYishuv. What does it mean you're not part of the Yishuv? Maybe it makes a difference as to what the community finds acceptable. Isn't that something that should make sense? If the whole issue is Yishuv, maybe the community makes a difference, right? And so if it's become acceptable, right, that people eat hot dogs in stadiums, that people eat outside on the Midrachov. In fact, it's very nice. I unfortunately was in the cemetery today in Woodbridge. I got there 45 minutes early. I stopped into the mall across the street because I had to use the facilities, right? And, you know, they set themselves up all over the mall. There are these tiny little areas in the Woodbridge Mall that you can go ahead and sit down and eat, right? And I think they make it look exceptionally nice. You want to tell me somebody who sits and eats in such a situation is Einom and HaYishuv? It seems to be that that's quite acceptable in the community. But our dear friend, the Ungvar Rav, the Rav Menashe Klein, in Shalos Tshuvas Mishnah Halachos, Volume 5, Simen Tes Vav, Os Samach Aleph, he says, are you kidding? In my opinion, he says, if somebody goes ahead and he eats at a smorgasbord at a wedding, especially a co-ed smorgasbord, in such a situation, he cannot be an aide at the wedding. Wow. Wow. Right? And then he tells a funky story. He around a year ago, this time, we were in the middle of our series of profiles in the pandemic, and we learned about Rav Yossi Shaul Natanson, right, the author of the Shol Meshiv. And so he tells a story about Rav Yossi Shaul Natanson that we did not retell last year at this time. And what did Rav Yossi Shaul Natanson tell us? He apparently observed at the great market in near where he was in the Ukraine, he noticed that that there was a Jewish guy who was eating in the marketplace, and he saw him from the window. So he calls the guy over to the window, and he starts playing Jewish geography with the guy. This is the way that that Rav Menashe Klein tells the story. And he asks the man, where do you come from? So the guy says, I'm from Krakow. He says, you're from Krakow? He says, yeah. He says, tell me, do you know the rabbi of Krakow? So the man says, me? Of course I know the rabbi in Krakow. I'm part of the house. So Rav Yossi Shaul says, listen, if I give you a confidential letter, can you bring it to the rabbi in Krakow? He says, absolutely. So they say, Rav Yossi Shaul hands him a note, and he seals it up, and he seals it, and he makes it very clear that it's very important, but very confidential. So the guy goes, and he says, I got your mission. I'll see the Rav next week. I'll make sure to deliver the letter right away. And, of course, on the way back, his friends are sitting there saying, look, you know, who is this guy that all of a sudden the great Rav Yossi Shaul Natanson is giving him all this stuff? There are people who the Rav in Krakow is a lot closer to. Well, that's the way it goes. He gets to Krakow, and he goes, the gentleman comes to see, you know, the Rav of Krakow, and he says, I have a note from the great Rav Yossi Shaul Natanson, and he insisted that I must bring the letter to you. So the Rav takes the letter and can't understand. There are better examples of people who could, you know, if it was so important, send a telegram. I would have figured it out. He opens up the letter. And it says the following in the letter. My dear friend, the great Rav of Krakow. He says, in order to remove any possibility of sin, I just want you to know I observed the man who brought this letter eating in the market, and as such, he's Pasul La'edus. Signed, Yosef Shaul Natanson. This is the story that he tells. So again, obviously, Rav Menashe Klein takes a very serious view over here, and he assumes that it's a very bad thing. At the same time, the great Rav of Gilo, Rav Elyo Schlesinger, in Askinu Sudasa, Os Samach Aleph 61, so he says, although it's not proper to eat in the middle of the open street, maybe it just looks funky. He says, but in our world, it's not considered improper, right? In our world, people eat in the Midrachov. And you can't cancel somebody from being able to eat from being able to serve as a witness. Moreover, he says, even if it is wrong, right? it's not something that's, you know, it's not Chilul Shabbos that we can say, oh, now all of a sudden everyone's Mechalel Shabbos, so, you know, we would just totally ignore it. He says, today, if you started telling people that if they ate the smorgasbord, they can't be eating them at the wedding, right, you're going to start running around looking to see, oh, I want to honor the great Rabbi Dr. Wenger to go ahead and be my eighth kiddushin, but unfortunately he had an egg roll at the smorgasbord. So now, you know, he says people are gonna start looking at you funny, and they're gonna call you a Baal Gaiva, and such a person is also Basileidus. So somebody who's so horny is also Basileidus. So he says, in the end of the day, he doesn't think that this is one of those things that you should stand on ceremony for. But he does that, you know, and so therefore, especially given the COVID situation, right, I think that there's room. I also would like to add that I don't think every single outdoors counts as outdoors, right? For instance, if you notice in Pinchas' store, so when he put up that outdoor eating area, so you'll notice that it's an indoor-outdoor. What does that mean? There are walls, right? That could be a sukkah. It's a fully legitimate sukkah with a lot of windows. So, you know, I think we're just talking about a guy who plops himself down in the middle of the street, in the middle of the midrachot. Maybe that's where the problem starts. And maybe that's what Rashi's talking about when he says, Eino min ha-yishuv, right? He says he doesn't even care about where everybody else fits. The world is just so big for him that such a person, like, come on, you don't really see anybody else in the world? Maybe that's what we're talking about. I think a lot of what we're observing today in the eateries, they have sectioned off areas, right? What's the name of the street? West Englewood Avenue in Teaneck, right? So they cordoned off a whole bunch of areas so that each of those, there's, I don't think somebody who eats outside over there is Eino min ha-yishuv, any more so than somebody who goes up to a bungalow colony that has a set eating area for the group, right? And set, you know, within an area that's perhaps open, but covered. I don't think that's Eino min ha-yishuv as well. And so therefore, I think in those situations, yes, it's nice and it's true that the Gemara says something, but let's make sure that we know what the Gemara, the application of the Gemara is. It sounds like Rav Menashe Klein takes one stringency. It sounds like Rabbi Schlesinger takes the opposite. And that's what we would go. Go ahead, Gemara.
Is there an element of mindfulness involved here? Because if the food comes from Hashem, and we should be aware and conscious of that as we're eating, that's impossible to do when you're walking around outdoors, busy with people, to have that kind of connection. You take it for granted. You don't. You might even forget to bench or something.
Maybe. Certainly, having mindfulness just in appreciation of food is something that I think we all need to use. Maybe when you're busy watching the game, right? Maybe you would lose it as well. But that, all of those things under consideration, I did not see that the Star case said they were going to pull the hefsher from the hot dogs at the stadium. In fact, I think the kashrus organizations de facto have come up with their feeling about this by virtue of the fact that they're giving their hefsher, you know, in all of these places. And they wouldn't give their hefsher if every time you bought a hot dog at the stadium, right, it wound up costing you your right to be able to serve as a witness at the game.
You know, but the stadium hot dog also is a good place to arrange for Marav minions.
That's true.
But the other question is, if they didn't have the kosher hot dogs, would some of the people who buy the kosher hot dog who are Jewish buy the non-kosher?
This is also a legitimate question and also worthy of exploration. These are two very important points. But I like that. I like the idea of mindfulness because I do think it is essential. So that's where we are on the second question. If you have a couple of minutes, let's go back to the first one because I think it's also interesting. So the first person is worried about how to wash Netilas Yadayim. So he's going to have his hot dog, right? Maybe not in the street, maybe not at the stadium. You can, you know, take that whichever way you want. But, you know, he's been so careful to wash his hands or her hands so much that the dry skin's cracked and the person has a lotion. But the lotion also serves to protect it. Now every time I wash my hands, I think that I'm not really washing my hands. I'm washing the lotion. Do I have a problem? So I found this fascinating for this week in particular because the Pasuk tells us in this week's parsha, Viskadishtem Yesem Kedoshim, you need to sanctify yourselves and you will be holy. And the Gemara says in Hulin, Viskadishtam, Elu Mayim Rishonim, Visum Kedoshim, Elu Mayim Achronim. And we learned in the Gemara Hulin that there is such a concept of Mayim Rishonim and Mayim Achronim. So the fact that we're talking about the Shadow this week proves what, my dear Dr. Wenger?
It's all connected.
Wonderful and terrific. Okay, so now that we see everything is connected, let's try to figure out where connections actually don't work for us. And when we talk about the laws of chatzitza for netilas yadayim, where we have something that unfortunately is connected, so much so that it impedes the flow of water, Orachaim Simon Kuf Samach Aleph, the Mishnah Berura begins with a little bit of an overview of the issues at hand. And he says, look, when we talk about a chatzitza on a biblical level, we look at it in regard to a person who's going to the mikvah. And we talk about chatzitzos, and we make a differentiation between different types of chatzitzos. A chatzitza that covers a majority of the body, or what we would call robe, that's called the chatzitza de oraisa, and it would offset the tefillah, versus a chatzitza that's on a miyut, on the minority of the body, right? In which case, biblically, it would not be considered a difficulty. It's only a minority. We also have a second factor that we put into place, and that second factor that we put into place is whether it is called makbid versus eno makbid. What does makbid mean? Do we care about it? If we care about it, it will make a difference, versus where I don't care about it, where it might not make a difference. So the laws of netilas yadayim start off one level down. Tevila is a d'oraisa, right? When a person has an obligation to go to the mikvah, these days it's mostly the woman, and at the right time in the month, and also a ger. When a ger or a georis become religious, those are the biblical instances. And when we deal with netilas yadayim, that's by definition already rabbinic. But we have a rule called the Tikkun Rabbanan Kein D'oraisa Tikkun. Rabbinic laws are patterned after biblical laws. And so therefore, if you automatically have a miyut ve'eino makbid, if it's on a minority, and the person doesn't care, for sure that would not be a problem of a chatzitza. So what is the definition of makbid? That's the first thing we have to figure out to get to our lotion. So I think we need to look at three different nuances. Question number one we have to ask is it based on what I care about, or what people in general in the greater community would care about? So here the Mishnah Berurah in Kuf Samach Aleph Zion quotes the Torah, who says that, what are you talking about? It's individual specific. If you care, then you care. Okay, Abraham and others strongly disagree with the Torah, and they say, no, how could everything be dependent on every single person? One person, you know, is Charlie Brown or Felix Unger from The Odd Couple, right? And that person, everything's a chatzitza. And the other person is Pigpen from Charlie Brown's cartoons. And that guy's got nothing. No, there's no such thing. So it doesn't make sense to make things limited. And the halacha, we seem to assume that the standard has to be a general basis. So what if most people don't care, but the person cares? Like she is very strict about these things on her hands. So the Mishnah Berurah here in Sif Katan Yud argues that if the person is particular, even when other people aren't, then the thing to do is to be strict because of the position, to be concerned with the position of the Torah. However, the Shulchan Aruch Harav, which is the Shulchan Aruch used by Lubavitchers, it was written by the author of the Tanya, and in Kuf Samach Aleph Gimel, he says, what are you talking about? An individual's opinion, you just paskin. That batla daita weitzel kol adam, that we say that an individual is secondary to the opinion of the community. And so therefore, if you are specific and you care, too bad, right? It's still not going to be a chatzitza, which is not really too bad. It's good, right? It works out to your advantage sometimes. So thinking of the machlokas is where we go individual communal, and even the chumra, we have a machlokas where which way to go. So how do we frame the concept, which is question number three? So the Mishnah in Mikvos, in Perek Tes, Mishnah Gimel says that if a person is makbid on a biblical connection, so to speak, interposition, something that interrupts, so that's called a chatzitza. And the Rambam in his commentary on that Mishnah says that what does it mean that something is chotzeitz? What does it mean? It says it means that the person is makpid, which is to say, I'm bothered by having that item in existence and I want it off me. Right? So the Sri Deish, Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg of Montreux, in the second volume of Sri Deish, Simon Mem Dalit, he says, Eino makpid means not caring both in the short term and the long term. Not caring because of a short-term thing, like for instance, let's say a woman or a man needs to have a piece of cotton that's held in place because the person is undergoing a treatment and that cotton contains necessary medicine that's there to help you. So right now you don't care. But 3 hours from now or a week from now, if you're walking around with a yellow iodine piece of cotton attached to your body, you're going to be like, ugh, that's disgusting, right? So he says that, you know, it has to be both things. So with that in mind, let's look at common chatzitzos, and we'll see where we go with that. So let's say a person has ink on his hand, right? I was writing. This is a classic yeshiva guy situation. And there's ink all over my hands. So now it's lunchtime. Until I get the ink off, it won't be lunchtime anymore. Lunch is now finished. Can I wash netilas yadayim, or do I have to be concerned? So the Mishnah Berurah in his commentary, Bir Halacha, he says, look, if you work in the dyeing industry, and I'm not talking about the one that involved the cemetery that I was in today, right? If you work in the dyeing industry, you don't need to worry about dye on your hands. But the Ben Ish Chai in Parshas Kedoshim, he says, what are you talking about? Of course you have to be concerned. It doesn't really matter, says Rav Sternbach, however, from the Eid HaRedis in Chubas HaHagos Chelek Beis Simon Kuf Yad Zayin. He says, because today, even a dyer would have a problem. Why? What do you think the dyer does at the end of his day?
Probably washes his hands as best he can.
Washes his hands. Why does he wash his hands when he goes home? They have that soap that has the pumice stone inside it, right? I forgot the name of it, but you can get it in the store, right? The answer is,
Lava.
Thank you. That is the name, the lava soap. Well done, Dr. Zwanger. Right? We have, but Rabbi Sternbach says, like, I understand we have sinks and we have lava soap, so we all care, right? And so the children who have the pen on their hands should be told the same thing you and I were told when we were little, which is go wash up before supper, right? Go wash up, right? And so therefore, that means get the ink off your hands. What about nail polish? Isn't nail polish the same thing? The person has nail polish on his or her hands.
Well, part of the difference, too, is that the ink can come off onto the food, but the nail polish is not going to come off.
Laura, which way does that fit into our discussion? What if the ink's not going to come off?
So then it's not I wouldn't think it's as much of a problem.
So the Karen LeDavid and Rav Yitzchak Yosef, the chief rabbi, both note that women who wear nail polish, why?
To look pretty.
Which means, do they care that it's there? They very much care, but they don't want it removed. It's quite the opposite. They want it. They spend all that money to get the manicure. So therefore, he says, they both say, of course that's not called makpida. And therefore, by definition, nail polish is not a chatzitza for netilas yadayim. Why would we encourage women who go to the mikveh to not wear nail polish is a much longer discussion and somewhat of a debatable point. Our practice is to be strict about it. But as far as netilas yadayim is concerned, yeah, the women who wear nail polish, there's absolutely no discussion. So the Karen LeDavid makes a fascinating point. He says, what about a man who wears nail polish?
What about
a male?
So
he says, here he sees a gender differentiation. Why? Let's go over what we learned. It's not an individual specific determination, right? So we have to look at the general population of men. Did the general population of men wear nail polish? No. And so therefore, Karen LeDavid says that aside from the fact that there may be a biblical violation of Simlas Isha, that a man is not supposed to wear women's clothing, he says it would also be a question of a chatzitza for netilas yadayim. And so therefore he says, as far as the approach is concerned, there is a gender-specific determination. What about a band-aid or a cast?
That is a chatzitza, no?
So it depends on why it's there. So the shulch, it's a chatzitza for mikvah, but we're going to go a step backwards and take a step back from the mikvah. We're going to only look at nitilas yadayim because I got to get down to the solution issue, right? So the Shulchan Aruch and Aruch Chaim Siman Kof Samach Aleph Suf Yud says he talks about something called a ripia, some sort of grabbing that has medication that that can't be removed. And such a ripia, if it can't be removed, it's not a chatzitza. And the Mishnah Berurah agrees. And he notes that if it would cause pain to take it off, right, it can't be considered a chatzitza. And so Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach is quoted by Professor Abraham in Nishmas Avram, who says that for Netilas Yadayim, therefore, just wash the areas around the cast. And similarly, if the author of the Peskei Tshuvos quotes that if a person, that having an open wound, is a problem. So having a covering over the open wound, what you and I would call a
bandage,
right? That's not called a chatzitza. The big problem would be protecting the protector. That's called a chatzitza. So when we were kids, they had KISS that they would tell you, whatever you do, do not get the plaster cast wet. And so therefore they would tell you, if you need to do anything, wash your hands or whatever, put a plastic bag over the hands. Right? So there already we say that that would create a problem, and that would be a chatzitza, even according to these poskim. Rabbi Nasha Klein, since we were quoting him before, the Umbar Rav, in Shalos HaTshuvos Mishnah Halachos, Volume 7, Simon Yurtes, he says that a person also has to be careful not to allow the water, should it go up inside the cast, which doesn't need to be going there, to spill back over the rest of your hand, because if you're washing in an area that doesn't have to be washed, it's going to pick up things that shouldn't be there, right? And then it's going to spill back over the already clean hands. You're going to have to wash again. So he says, just be careful with the way you position your hands, which I would never have thought of. Okay? What about a woman who's got a ring? She can't get a ring off. Or a man who's got a ring who can't get a ring off. Very common situation. Now, what do you do about that? Don't eat bread. Don't have so much salt. Okay. Right? So in the olden days, women would be very strict that when they would eat dough, they would take off their rings. So if you take it off to eat dough, right, so then it's a chatzitza. But the Or LeZion in Chelek Beis, Zimin Yud Aleph, and Hilchos Netilas Yadayim, today the women are not so specific. A woman never takes off her ring, so then she doesn't need to take it off for a Netilas Yadayim. If a woman does regularly take off her ring, so then it would be considered a chatzitza for Netilas Yadayim. However, the author of the Shari Elio comes along and he says, look, if she can't get it over, right, it's too tight, that taking it off causes her pain, why should that be, the pain in taking it off, be any different than the pain in taking off the band-aid or the cast? And if in those cases we said it's not a chatzitza, over here it should also not be a chatzitza. So again, we have talked about the makpid element. We talked about the community, the gender-specific element where the person wants it and the environment wants it. And we also talked about the element of it's too painful to remove. Then what does this do for us with our lotion? And with this we'll close out. So Rav Yitzchak Yosef, the great chief, starting chief rabbi of the state of Israel, and Yalkut Yosef, both the Mishnah and Idios, in Perek Dal and Mishnah Vav, who says that you should just know all oils aren't chotzeis, except for Shemen Hamor. Shemen Hamor is a lot of extra ingredients, so it's a little bit different. But otherwise, the oils are not, they're not going to cause a chatzitza. It's not the way that they are. There's no mamashas. There's no substance to it. And Rav Yitzchak Yosef extends the idea to include all creams and lotions. He says creams and lotions don't exist. You may feel something, but you can't see something. So therefore, by definition, it's not considered a chatzitza, right? I should also like want. I would add, if I hate to his great words, that you may feel a film on your hands, but at the worst, in our shaila, that film is serving a purpose. What purpose?
To help your hands, not
to protect the hands, right? To moisturize and protect the hands. that should be no different than a ratia, than this, the band-aid guy with the medication. It means it's serving a medicinal purpose, right? So for sure, it's not going to be a chatzitza. And so therefore, what should the person do? Okay, so what should the person do? So I think the answer is pretty clear. If you have the lotion, use the lotion. If you can rub it in a little bit so that you don't have gloves sitting on top of your hand, that would be a... I'm sorry, can you hear me now? Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we do.
Okay.
Yes.
But I think, don't have the big gloves of sunscreen or dry skin cream, sitting up there in the big white. But certainly if it's rubbed in, right, and it's just a feels film, it feels filmy, I don't think that that's going to be a problem whatsoever. And I think that a person can proceed. So tonight, what did we go through? We learned that you can wash your hands with the moisturizing cream still on it, right? We learned that once you're done washing your hands, you can probably get away with sitting wonderfully in one of our outdoor eateries, maybe have a sand and enjoying your meal. So with that in mind, I'm going to wish you both a wonderful, terrific Shabbos, and all of everybody, all our listeners as well. And Bezrat Hashem, we'll get together next week. Actually, next week, I'm hoping to do something a little different in honor of Yom HaAtzmaut. So maybe we'll hear from a number of different people who will have what to say both about Yom HaZikaron and Yom HaAtzmaut. Everyone have a wonderful, wonderful Shabbat, and we'll be in touch.
Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom to all.